The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We have been in the process of discussing some organisms most people really don't know a great deal about, yet they are found in the phylum Arthropoda. And to my mind, at least, one of the reasons for talking about taking the time to do that is that they simply demonstrate that they could not have occurred as a result of some kind of an evolutionary process being formed from ancestors, common ancestors. And conceivably, you may get tired of me making the comment, but in that repetition, don't miss the point. Over and over and over again, we see organisms that, with all of their attempts and time spent, the evolutionists still cannot find any reasonable, sensible ancestor, nor are there any descendants that, in the case of the trilobites, for example, that are now only fossils. There are no known live ones. There's nothing that comes away from them at all. They're just sitting there in the fossil record. In the case of the horseshoe crabs, of course, there are fossil ones, and there also are those that are alive today. Now, the Pycnogonida that we were talking about, the sea spiders, I have been intrigued by the fact, if you don't know, I really don't think you would guess where they are found primarily. They are found most common in polar waters. Now, polar waters are immensely cold. So some of the pycnogonids have a very thin body. They have some long, thin chelicerae, and they'll have a proboscis we'll talk about in a moment. Usually, they will have four pair of legs, like arthropods do. By the way, in passing, let me remind you that horseshoe crabs have five pairs of legs and no segmentation. And for these reasons, some would try and classify them someplace beside arthropoda, but they're stuck with the fact that they have exoskeletons and jointed appendages, so there really is no place else they can go. In some cases, there may be more than four pair of legs, maybe five or six. But they also have, in many species, the males have a subsidiary pair of appendages that are known as ovigers. These are structures in which often, at certain seasons, they will be carrying the eggs. And it's interesting to me that the females don't have this. So you have some very unusual structures involved in the reproductive process here. And again, in passing, let me remind you of the difficulties of trying to evolve this kind of a relationship. We're talking about structures and behavior which have to work right the first time, or you don't have any organisms produced. And yet they're very different from the other organisms that we have been talking about here in this group. They also will have chelicerae, these little appendages at the front of the head. And they also have palpi. These are simply appendages that are usually not walking. They are simply there for a variety of reasons, but they are found consistently. Now, the proboscis. They have a long proboscis, and at the end of that proboscis, you have the mouth. These things are they live, generally, from material they are able to suck. They have four simple eyes, no compound eyes. The circulatory system is simply a one dorsal heart, and there are no excretory or respiratory systems. So these apparently can be handled because of the added area of the long, thin legs that they have. And interestingly, the digestive system will send branches into the long legs. Now, if you know anything about human anatomy, and you start trying to think over in your mind the differences between the abdomen, for example, in the sea spiders and in your body. We're talking about some major differences. And all of these things have to find their basis in the genetic material. So you have genetic material that forms structures in these organisms that are completely different from what we would observe in any of the other organisms that we've talked about to this point. Now, there are also the common Pycnogonida is a very thick organism. Legs are thick. The body is thick. These are the ones I think that are found on both of our coasts, Atlantic and Pacific coasts here. Some authorities look on these organisms and would try and classify them as crustaceans for reasons I am not certain about, but they'd try and put them there rather than with the other arthropods. And they also have larvae, very different from the adults. So we see a life cycle where there is a gross change in structure between larvae and adults. And again, when you try and come up with a scheme of evolution that involves major structural body changes between adults and between larvae and adults, and then you try and come up with an evolutionary scheme that would be sufficient to produce that, you are simply left hanging, because there is simply no way that there's no basis in nature, nothing in nature to suggest that, nothing in the fossil record to suggest that. So these organisms, although they are fairly rare, also are some of the most terrific testimonies to the necessity of a creator, rather than the vagaries of some kind of evolutionary scheme. So whether you're familiar with them or not, whether you have known anything about them before or not, at least for this reason, they are worth giving some thought to. Now, there remains one class in the subphylum Chelicerata. This is the class Arachnida. And as soon as I say that, I would assume most of you know immediately what we're talking about. The arachnids, of course, are the spiders. There is probably as much or more variety in the spiders than there is in all of the insects, and that's making quite a statement. Some of this we'll talk about, and again, whenever you are interested in pursuing further information about any of these organisms, very simple to do. If you are computer literate, the World Wide Web will tell you more about any of these organisms than you ever want to know. And if you aren't, then any current invertebrate zoology book would give you information about these organisms. Now, the organisms that we find here in Arachnida are quite varied. They include the scorpions, some rather interesting organisms that are known as whip scorpions that differ in the fact that they do not have a poisonous stinger like the regular scorpions do. There are some pseudoscorpions. There are the spiders. There are a group known as Solpugidae. These are the sun spiders. We have one of these in our collection that came, I believe, either from Arizona or Southern California. And you have the Acarina, the ticks or mites. So even if you have just a cursory understanding of these organisms, you're aware that they're very, very different. We have the class Arachnida, and we have these other groups that are orders within that class, six orders of organisms found in the class Arachnida. The primary reason that all of these organisms are put into this class is that they have four pairs of walking legs. Now, in addition, all of the ones that I mentioned, that is the case for. In addition to that, they will have some variation, some variety in all of that. They will have chelicerae, obviously, since they belong to the Chelicerata. they often will have a pair of pedipalps. A palp is an external appendage. Pedi would suggest that they would aid, perhaps, in walking. And then the four pair of walking legs. They also will have, they do not have antennae or mandibles, which are structures that you will find very commonly in the last group of arthropods that we will talk about a little bit later. Most of the organisms here are predaceous. That means they are going to survive by feeding on other organisms. The feeding often is simply a matter of, since they don't have chewing mouth parts, they are not able to chew up the organisms, so they will have very strong sucking apparatus in their mouth. They will usually survive on the juices that are found in the organisms that they have attacked. They have a sucking mouth part. They will have very powerful sucking capability for the pharynx. This is the portion of the digestive tract back of the mouth parts. So they can't chew them up, but they will. They do have the ability to, if they have stingers, as many of them do, they can kill the prey that way, and then they can simply suck the juice out of them, and often will toss away the dried out carcass of the organism that they have killed. We will talk later a little bit about the black widow. I remember a comment that one of my teachers made about the black widow. The female black widow has the engaging habit of killing her mate and then sucking him dry. And the professor's comment was, this is one way to assure fidelity. I'm not sure that's the best way. But again, it's an unusual characteristic. It is not repeated for all of the spiders, but it simply means, again, that there are habits and in some cases structures that could not have been produced by some kind of an evolutionary process. And these organisms, as the others have been, are testimony rather to a wise creator.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.